Hello, welcome to the latest bonus of the Rest Is History Club. We are very excited as ever to be talking to you, aren't we, Tom?
We are, yeah. And I'm particularly excited, Dominic. And can I tell you why?
What are you excited by?
Well, I'm very excited, and you'll know about this because I've signed you up to it. On the 23rd of May, we are doing a live event, and this is for the very best of reasons. We're doing it to raise money for three charities, all of them helping out the homeless. Among them, a charity that will be doing work with Ukrainian refugees, but also homeless people in London. And this is going to be at St. Martin in the Fields in Trafalgar Square.
Yeah.
Yeah. St. Martin in the Fields does wonderful work with the homeless. So that's why we're doing it there. On the evening of Monday, the 23rd of May. And Dominic, as you will know, what we're going to do is tell the whole history of the world and indeed the universe in the space of an hour.
Yes. Well, we're not going to be doing that single-handed, though. Oh, indeed, we're barely doing it at all, are we? I mean, I thought we were just kind of comparing.
We have some celebrity friends.
Yeah.
So?
Will you do?
No, you, because one of them is a friend of the show, Rachel Morley.
Yeah, my sister-in-law. Yes.
Who'll be coming on and doing the history of churches.
But
in
she's
a minute.
Got to do that in a minute. So yes. I was talking to her about this weekend, and I said she said she was going to start doing some preparation.
Don't.
Yeah, I was like, what?
And then Hagia Sophia, and yeah. So Rachel will be on it, and Tracy Borman, another friend of the show, who expert commentator on.
She's going to be in the monarchy or something.
Can do the Tudors.
Tudors. Wow. In a minute.
And we've got Sebastian Foakes, who's going to do the First World War.
Very good.
We've got Robert Harris, who's going to do the Second World War. We've got, we have Susie Maidment, who you may not have heard of, Dominic, not being a paleontologist, but she is the world's leading expert on stegosaurs.
Okay.
So she's going to be doing dinosaurs.
Okay.
We've got Adam Rutherford, top scientist, who's going to be doing the Big Bang.
Yeah.
We've got Michael Wood, who's going to be doing the Anglo-Saxons. We've got Peter Frankopan, who will be doing, I don't know, Asia.
Yeah.
And we've got Dan Snow, who I think, does he run another podcast?
He does. Another podcast, as I always say, if you've missed any episodes or you want to hear them again, you can always hear them on Dan Snow's podcast 2 weeks after ours.
Don't say that or Dan will walk out and not do it.
That's the thing.
So if you want to sign up to that, I will put the website on the Discord so that you can see it there. But please do. It's a kind of an event entirely geared to raising money. And you can either come to the event, or if you're an absolute glutton for punishment, there will be a gala dinner held in the base of the crypt of St. Martin in the Fields after it.
Hold on, is that not the same as the event?
No, the event is held in the church. So we do our hour, and then we have a dinner afterwards.
Okay. Well, it sounds brilliant, actually.
I think it'll be great fun. All support.
And Tom, this is just 2 days after our Athelstan party.
It's just non-stop entertainment, isn't it?
It is non-stop entertainment.
And I should say that I'm going to advertise this event on Twitter, but I wanted to give you guys first refusal.
That's nice of you.
Yeah.
It's very nice. All right. Well, the big news is for the Rest Is History. I find this actually slightly insulting, I have to say. The Rest Is History official Twitter followers. The Rest Is History account now has more followers than I do. by a considerable margin, I have to say.
40,000.
I don't know what you're getting from the Rest Is History account that you couldn't get from me, but there you go. So on the Discord, various small things, just bits of business. Alfonso the 14th, the pretender, who asked about 387 questions to Helen Thompson about oil.
And they were all excellent.
They were very good questions.
They were very good questions.
Wants to share a book with everybody by Jade Chang called The Wangs Versus the World. So I know some people are still obviously very resistant to being called Wangs. I can understand that. But on the other hand, there is enormous satisfaction for me and Tom because, to give you an example, I was in Oxford doing a book talk, an Adventures in Time talk, and a very nice chap came up with his two sons, and his sons had their book signed. And then he just sort of leaned forward. You'll probably listen to this. And said, I'm one of your Wangs. And we know what it means, but probably outsiders may find that a bit odd.
But Dominic, yesterday, so we're recording this on Monday, so on Sunday evening, I went to the Woolwich Arsenal and I saw General Gordon Square.
Did you?
Yeah, home of the Wangs.
Wow. And did you take a picture?
I did. I actually put it on the Discord.
Oh, very good, Tom. Very good.
And actually, that people who are in London or who can get to London who want to combine seeing the home of the Wangs with what's a really fabulous show in Woolwich, and it's a kind of immersive theatrical experience. You'd hate it, Dominic. It involves interpretive dance.
I probably wouldn't care for it. I like I like ballet, but I don't like interpretive dance.
So
I like classical ballet.
So it's called The Burnt City, and it's about the Trojan War. And there are two great warehouses with various rooms and annexes and places and fire escapes and all that kind of stuff. And you wander around and you've got no idea what's going on. And there are kind of various rooms in which the gods are. And then Iphigenia get sacrificed. And really, it's fabulous. It's really brilliant.
This is A, precisely how I imagine you spend your weekend when you're not playing cricket, and B, exactly what I expect of London events.
Yeah, it's so London.
Yeah.
There was a stage where Hecuba was mourning the fall of Troy as ash fell on her head to a slamming techno and a kind of strobe going. And I thought of how much you would hate it.
Yeah. Yes. I think anything playing techno is just, they do that. The Royal Shakespeare Company do it all the time when they want to look urban. They put on some techno from 1993 and they think they're shocking their audience, but they never are.
But this is properly urban because it's Woolwich Arsenal. Anyway, yeah, I commend it.
Okay. Let's go back into the Discord, Tom. Somebody, Joe Evans Green, put up a thing that I've seen before that always amuses me, which is, have you seen this, Tom? It's the list of endorsements for, for I think it's Doris Kearns Goodwin's book, Team of Rivals. And for no reason that I can ever really understand, the list goes, so it has Barack Obama, Robert Harris, Alex Ferguson, and me.
Yeah. And Jon Snow.
Yeah. And Michiko Kakutani of the New York Times. New York Times is famously formidable literary critic. Joe Evans Green clearly thinks, is amused that I'm in this company. I'm next to Sir Alex Ferguson, basically.
Well, yeah. So Joe Evans Green, let us not forget the most important person of all is a historian who is nearly Paddington.
Yeah.
Which I think by a process of elimination must mean you.
Yes.
And Barry Grogan, that's a president of the USA, former manager of Manchester United and the King of the North, giving glowing reviews.
Yeah. Let's talk about Barry Grogan again. He's come up again. He says, do you approve of the revenge that Macedonia had tonight on the Romans after 2,200 years of hurt? Now, I know you did approve of this.
I did.
But did you not get in trouble because, and Barry should get in trouble because, of course, it's not Macedonia. It is the Republic of North Macedonia. And this will have Hellenes on social media
and
pulling out their hair. Yeah.
Yes.
So what happened here, Tom? Did you get grief from Hellenes about...
So I alluded to the Battle of Pydna, where the Roman legions destroyed the last army of the Macedonian king Perseus, and Macedonia effectively lost its independence. Well, it didn't effectively, it did lose its independence. And I said something along the lines of 2,000, whatever it is.
Years of hurt.
173 years of hurt.
So this is the context of North Macedonia knocking Italy out of World Cup qualification.
Yeah. Yeah. So I thought that was a perfectly harmless joke.
Yeah, no.
But, of course, I woke up in the morning and my timeline was full of Greeks and people from North Macedonia arguing over Balkan history.
Well, this is what you know.
But I just blanked it.
I did that series, Hijacked Histories.
I know, that we interviewed you for. I was in it, yeah.
Yeah, you're in it for the episode about Alexander and about his legacy and about Macedonian and Greece and the Macedonian naming issue. And if you ever read the reviews of that series, I think it was an audio book, basically. And everybody always liked the first five episodes, but then episode six, it's just full of Macedonian Greek nationalists just
shouting at each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but also, Tom, you've also been involved. Now, I haven't really dug into this. You've also had an interesting exchange on social media with somebody who I don't imagine is a massive listener to The Rest Is History, because he would regard it as far too frivolous. And that is Mail on Sunday columnist Peter Hitchens.
So that's who he is.
Did you not know who he was?
I knew that he's the brother of Christopher Hitchens, right? So Christopher Hitchens, the big fan of the Iraq War and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And Peter Hitchens, so he's a columnist.
Yeah. Do you genuinely not know who Peter Hitchens is?
He kind of occasionally pops up on Twitter.
Right.
But I've no idea really who he is.
What's he crossed with you about?
There was a very, very, I thought, very good, nuanced, detailed analysis of the degree to which fascism is a problem in Ukraine. By Ross Atkins,
BBC.
I think that he is, he's a kind of model of everything the BBC represents at its best.
Yeah.
You know, balanced, nuanced.
He does
careful.
These brilliant 5-minute clips, yeah. doesn't he?
Yeah. And so I commended it to my followers. And this guy, Peter Hitchens, suddenly started saying, you know, that it was Maoist propaganda, effectively. And that I was stupid and an idiot and a fool. And it was, you know, it was. Well, he has the feel of a man who likes to prop up a golf club bar. Would that be fair?
It's a slightly green ink kind of man.
He likes the sound of his own voice, I think.
If it makes you feel better, I wrote an article for Unheard, UNHERD.
Pushing back against herd mentality.
I was, about the Truman Doctrine, the anniversary of the Truman Doctrine, and the idea of Cold War containment. And he sent me a message, very intemperate message about that.
Was he very rude?
Oh, it's all about Russia and Ukraine. I can't be bothered to talk about it now. But anyway.
It's really boring. And then he started kind of hassling me and saying, why aren't you arguing? And it's the same reason that you don't argue with people who come and shout at you in pubs.
Yeah.
It's not a fun way to spend your weekend. And also, Dominic, the other reason was that I was in Copenhagen for the weekend.
You were. And you went to the National Museum of Denmark, which is a very nice museum.
Good. And they've got a brilliant new display on Vikings that's absolutely full of silver nicked from England. And so I said at the time that it made me feel like a foreign visitor going to the British Museum.
Did you chat about them decolonizing and say you wanted your silver back?
Demanding it back. I didn't. It's got Roskilde 6, which is a fast ship. Mm-hmm. You wander around and they show videos, which normally you think would be terrible, but it's really well done, about Bjorn Ironside's great raid across the Mediterranean.
Oh, and to Al-Andalus. And then he gets lost.
They're looking for Rome. They're trying to find Rome. And he never
finds
Rome. It's
someone called Lodi instead. Is it called Lodi or something like that?
Which they think might be Egypt.
Right. Yeah.
Anyway, if you're in Copenhagen, don't miss it. It's
very good city, Copenhagen. There was a discussion on the Discord about favorite cities. And Copenhagen was not in my top three, which were Lisbon, Stockholm, and Vienna. But Copenhagen probably will be in my top five or six. It's a lovely city, isn't it, Tom?
It is a wonderful city.
But as I say, it's not as good as Stockholm. So let's talk about some particular episodes. So St. Patrick, which was very much your neck of the woods, Tom.
Mm-hmm.
Harrison P.E. says he would like to hear more about the American frippery and how it's received in Ireland.
Well, I don't know.
And then there was lots of discussion about Joe Biden's I'm Irish and all this kind of thing. That was to the BBC.
Yeah, but there was also at the St. Patrick's Day celebration, there was something in which he implied that being Irish meant that he, didn't he say infelicitous comment?
Yeah, he did. Yes.
I mean, not exactly. As infelicitous as saying that he wants to overthrow Putin, which
I can't remember.
I
can't remember what it was, but he said something like,
He's had a great week for the gaffes.
But he's great. He's always been a great man for the gaffes.
The gaffmeister.
Even when he was at the peak of his powers, which I don't think anyone would claim that he now is. He was a great man for the gaffes. So I think the Irishness in America is really interesting. And I was thinking about this when I saw the questions. So obviously, all American presidents now profess Irish ancestry. And I wonder whether it is a way of creating a national origin myth that is not the compromised origin myth of the British and
the
British
fathers.
Empire and the Pilgrims. Because that has become tainted, not partly because of association with slavery, but also beyond that, with empire, it's not as heroic as it could be, I suppose. And because the Irish...
Biden is from Sussex, isn't he?
Is he?
His forebears are from Sussex. So I'm president of the Sussex Archaeological Society.
Right.
Which is Britain's oldest county archaeological society.
I think you've mentioned this before, Tom.
Yes, I have. And I tried to get in touch with Biden to see if he would...
come and talk to the society?
No, tweet out a message of support or something.
Oh, right.
But he didn't, obviously, because of his, you know...
That's poor.
He didn't want to fess up to being from Sussex. But maybe when he's not president, he can come and...
He can come clean. I'm not Irish at all. I'm actually from Sussex.
Yeah, he can come and help the Fishbourne Roman Palace.
You see, what I think it obviously does is it basically lays claim to an underdog identity, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And I don't think what do Irish people think? I mean, what does my wife think? I think they just find it. I don't think they think about it very much, actually. I mean, it's kind of nice. It's politically a kind of soft power, isn't it?
Yeah.
That they can go and give a bowl of shamrocks
yeah,
to the American president on St. Patrick's Day, and there's the parades and stuff, and it means that Americans think about Ireland. But I think when a lot of Americans think about Ireland, they're not thinking about real Ireland. They're thinking about a kind of Ireland of the imagination that is all,
and
which is all, yeah, which is all, because they really love to go in for that. Harps, leprechauns, Michael Flatley, all this sort of.
What's her name? Nancy Pelosi and Bono's poem.
Oh, Bono's poem.
That she read out. And she read out this terrible poem that Bono had written about Zelensky. And then I think she introduced Riverdance, didn't she?
She did. It was absolutely shocking. It was shocking. All right. Let's move on to also shocking behavior, the career of Genghis Khan. Come back, Zinc. Ali Ansari is an insanely good podcast guest. I would agree with that. He's a very nice fellow as well in person. I will feel personally cheated if he's not back on for Mongols 2, The Wrath of Kublai Khan. So he will come back for that.
Yeah, he will. Yeah,
he's
he will.
Well up for that. Yeah. I'm sure Ali will be appearing many times on The Rest is History, because we're great fans of his, and he cooked us dinner before Christmas, so he's endeared himself to us.
He's not only going to be doing The Mongols 2, he's going to be doing Tamerlane, so he's very keen to do that, and the Iranian Revolution.
Yes, yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
There's a very, very important clarification from Samantha Dalton, Sam Dalton.
Oh, God, you're going to mention this?
Yeah. Hi, love the podcast, especially the shameless plugs. Good to hear. In the episode about Genghis Khan, Tom said he lived in a gur. He'd heard that in Scotland. And you, I think that means you, Dominic.
No, I think it means you, Germany.
No, you, Dominic, made fun of him. I just listened to Noises podcast on the same topic. No idea what that is.
Other podcasts?
Extraordinary. And he pronounced it ger. If you allow for the accent, I hate to say it, Sam says, but Tom might not have been wrong. Try not to be too smug, she says. That's obviously at me. So I'm not going to be smug about it, Dominic. But
well,
I was right.
Shouldn't be, because she's quoting a completely different pronunciation.
I was right and you were wrong.
No.
And I'm not going to be smug about it, but I just think it's important that that is...
What is this even about?
It's about a gur.
Is that a yurt to normal people?
If you're Turkish speaking, it's a yurt. But if you're speaking Mongolian, which you claim to do when you did your outrageous impression of Genghis Khan.
We'll make you Khan.
Exactly. It's a gur.
Well, I'm the Mongolian speaker, so I'm the judge. Sam,
and I checked and I went and looked up, and there was some American guy building a gur on YouTube. And I checked, and that is, and it is a girl.
Okay, so now you know I'm going to the Bodleian, so I'm going to YouTube. I mean, it's very
yeah, but I already knew, Dominic.
Right, let's.
And you said that I was wrong, and I was right. So
let us press on. Let's move on to oil, because this was, we did two podcasts about oil with Helen Thompson. Now, she recently, for those of you who don't know, I'm sure most of you do, she had her own very successful podcast called Talking Politics with the political scientist David Runciman, that has now come to an end, I think. So we saw that she was available at a loose end, and we thought we'd snap her up to come and talk about her book, Disorder. And it was absolutely fascinating, wasn't it, Tom? The geopolitics of energy.
So on that theme of what patterns can you trace through history, I just found that revelatory, really. Because, of course, you vaguely know the vital importance of energy. But when you it's kind of lifting up the skin to look at the way that the muscles and the veins work underneath the skin. I thought it was a brilliant episode.
It was telling a lot of very well known history in a completely different way, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So the Kingfish Wang had lots of points about this, because the Kingfish Wang used to work in the oil and petrochemical industry. So the first point was a counterpoint to the prosperity and power of Texas, obviously Dallas, the soap opera.
And I thought Helen's bit on Dallas was brilliant.
Yeah, it was good. It was good. Exactly right to bring it in, I think, because it obviously, I suppose you would say that's the last point. That glories in oil, doesn't it, Dallas? You couldn't make that program today.
No. No, JL would be kind of barracked by DK protesters.
He would indeed. But the Kingfish Wang, so the counterpoint is Louisiana, because Louisiana also has an oil and gas-based economy, and it's been a blessing and a curse, because the wealth generated by Louisiana's resources has generally been extracted to other states. But I suppose other oil states around the world might say that they've been plundered ordinary people would say they've been plundered by the petrochemicals industry.
There was a very good contribution on the Discord today, today being Monday, people saying that essentially it depends how broadly based the governance of a country is that gets oil. And they were counterpointing Norway with Saudi Arabia or Libya or whatever. And I thought that was a very good point.
Yeah, because of course Norway invested all their oil winnings in a sovereign wealth fund.
Yeah, unlike us, we blew it on unemployment benefits.
Well, Tom, actually, I will now have a rant about this. People always say that about us, but they forget that two things. One, Norway had slightly more of the North Sea oil than we did, or more money. They made more money from it. But secondly, there are 10 times as many people in Britain as there are in Norway. So people have often said, well, why couldn't you use it to give everybody a pension? And the truth of the matter is because even if we'd invested it, the returns per person in a country with more than 60 million people would actually be pretty negative.
That's why that's the argument that turbocharged Scottish independence.
Well, it was their oil and they could have invested.
Their oil and they could have, yeah, just 8
million.
Yeah,
because they had such a small population. Well, it's too late now, isn't it? I mean, I don't want to...
blown it.
Yeah, it's gone. We've spent it. Right. Kingfish Wang also says it's important to remember that oil doesn't just make your car go and your house not cold. Oil and gas are essentially making plastics, fertilizers, and chemicals. They make just about everything else in the modern world. That's obviously absolutely true.
Yeah. And it's it combines with Ukraine's status as a breadbasket.
Oh, yeah.
That the specter of famine is now stalking the world, as well as the specters of plague and war.
See, that amazed me, Tom, because I can remember as a teenager reading an article about the dissolution of the Soviet Union in the Daily Telegraph at school, describing Ukraine as the breadbasket. And ever since then, that image was sort of stuck in my mind. So I knew that Ukraine was a breadbasket before I read that Egypt was one, for example. But I didn't know it was still a breadbasket today, did you? I didn't think they still produced such huge quantities of...
Yeah, I think so. Southern Russia and Ukraine. So I think it's really not very helpful.
To have a war?
For people to be fighting over fields that people can't harvest.
Again.
Or plant at the moment.
Again, it's too late now. I mean, you should have said that 6 weeks ago.
I really don't think I could have had much influence.
Really? I mean, no, I was listening to you when we recorded our crucifixion episode. I was listening to your intrepid stories of visits to the front line against Islamic State.
Yeah.
If only you'd made a similar journey, Tom.
I know.
To Donetsk and Luhansk at the beginning of February.
History
could have been very different. The Kingfish Wang makes the final point. Nothing in history has lifted more people out of poverty than easy access to cheap energy. Making energy inaccessible and expensive, no matter how you do it, must be considered when examining any kind of environmental and climate agenda. We're not a politics podcast, but this obviously seems to me to be the key problem with the climate crisis. On the one hand, the world is heating up, and on the other hand, as we see right now, actually, I mean, the huge hullabaloo in Britain in the last week or so about the cost of living and about energy prices and so on, and about how family income is being squeezed and stuff. People, we are used to having a particular living standard and paying, historically low, having it for very little. Do you not think
we need cold fusion? Don't we? Is it cold fusion?
Is that the thing that's going to magically create?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, some bloke did it a couple of weeks ago outside Oxford.
Yes, I read that. And they did it for like 90 seconds and extracted a very small amount of energy.
Yeah.
And they hope that they can they can build on this.
So I'm holding on for that.
Well, that's good. I'm glad you're optimistic.
It'd be made in Oxfordshire, so you'll probably get first
dibs. They'll export it.
Well, you're about to go on holiday to Disney World.
Yeah.
So I'm not actually sure what's happening.
We've got loads of things banked up. I don't know what you're worried about.
You're very selfishly putting your family first.
Also, you are in full control and command of the podcast.
Yes, I am.
So if I get back to discover...
Hello, welcome to the rest of history with me, Tom Holland, and Dan Snow.
maybe the punters would love that. You shouldn't have said it. I don't want to see loads of chat on the Discord about Tom's brilliant idea at the end of the bonus episode.
Yeah, we could put a poll up, couldn't we?
Yeah.
Replace Dominic.
Yeah. Thanks for that.
Yeah, so the Cultural Revolution, I mean, it's a very cultural revolution. Purges
Yeah, exactly.
I'm installing myself as the great helmsman.
Well, anyway, listen, we've got the occult influence on British politics on the 7th. We've got Agatha Christie on the 11th. We've got the crucifixion on the 14th.
Awkward. So that's an Easter show. We should.
Yes, it's a special, an Easter special on the crucifixion, which is absolutely fascinating because we recorded that earlier today. And Tom, I thought you were in splendid form.
Thank you very much. And then what else have we got? As I say, we've got the Cultural Revolution coming up as well. So if you really want to be depressed, listen to the episode on crucifixion and then round it off with the Cultural Revolution. If you want a sense of how appalling humans can be to other humans.
Oh, I'll tell you something I saw recently, Tom.
What's that?
I was examining a history prize at a well-known school in Slough.
Oh, were you?
And I went into their archive and they had George Orwell's...
We've got George Orwell coming up, haven't we?
But as a sort of preparation, they had George Orwell's books that he had when he was a boy, signed. They had a brilliant one. I couldn't see what the book was because it was in a sort of exhibition, but he'd written it to Eric Blair from himself.
Oh, that's sweet.
Which I thought was really sweet. Kind of thing you do when you're about 13. You know, they had all this stuff. They had his school reports and everything. It was absolutely, absolutely fascinating.
And what did his school report say?
The game they play, whatever game it is they play at Eton.
The wall, Eton wall game.
I don't think it was the wall game. I think it was the thing they called the field game.
I
said that to the teacher who was showing me around. I said, what's the field game? Is it like a version of, it's like a combination of rugby and football. And he looked at me kind of pityingly and he said, I think you'll find rugby and football are sort of the poor man's versions, debased versions of the field game. The field game is the original and the real game. But anyway, it said Orwell tried hard and had a very good kick.
Because he hated sport, didn't he?
Yes. Yeah. So it was one of those sort of pitying reports that you get when you're just shivering on the sidelines. But it was absolutely fascinating. I'll tell you what they also had. They had a postcard.
Please, sir. Blair is bunking off the field game.
Exactly. Exactly. Tell you what they also had.
Please, may I beat him, sir?
Which will not surprise people who are critics of this particular school. But they had a postcard signed by Goering and Hitler. Yeah.
We are looking forward to checking in a few years.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, it was absolutely fascinating. Anyway, the good news is they're all listening to The Rest is History. So
good. So wow.
We're shaping the leaders of tomorrow.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Thanks very much for listening. I'm not entirely sure what we are doing. So Dominic,
I've just read it out.
No. But with these ones, because you're going to be off, you know, lazing and in.
I'm not going to be lazy. I'm going to be kind of sobbing with a very overcomplicated schedule while my son is shouting at me.
I want to go on that ride again.
Yeah. No, yeah. We have to queue for 6 hours.
Yes, I know. I'm so looking forward to the Easter weekend. The idea of you queuing for 6 hours will so enhance my sense of relaxation. But what I was wondering was what's happening with the members. And I think that we're recording one before you go, aren't we? And I think Jack is going to come on as well, the other one.
Is he?
So it's going to be like the Wizard of Oz.
So all your talk of Dan...
Oh, no, Dom. Dom is coming on. Dom is coming on.
So all your talk of Dan Snow was just hogwash and hot air.
Well, I don't know. I might change my mind.
Yeah.
I can invite on anyone I like. But I think I'll probably ask on Dom.
Who would be your dream guest?
Dom.
Oh, that's nice. Great.
Because people who watch the Dark Ages episode...
Joe Dom has got a great suggestion for you.
Yeah, he has, but you're not going to read it out. You're not going to read it out. So people who listened to the Dark Ages episode will remember that a lot of it consisted of me yelling at Dom to find the right photo.
What
and he couldn't find it because I hadn't sent them to him. I think it's entirely my fault.
Dom, on the chat for this bonus episode between me and Dom, the producer has now put on in a comment who he thinks Tom's ideal guest would be. And Tom has banned me from reading it out.
Yes.
I think you should all guess on the Discord. And then I don't know. I tried to communicate who, in fact, it is. Which top historical celebrity it would be. And on that note, we'll say thank you while Tom is laughing. And we will see you all next week. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.